Jerry, talking about, well, a bit of the aftermath from last week's big events, the Apple event, and we just mentioned briefly about the Windows event, but we thought we'd talk a little more about that, do a little window shopping, talk about the economics of that and some other things going on. How you doing, Sarah?
Good morning, Jerry. I'm very well. How are you?
Most excellent. We're having a beautiful day here. Perfect temperature.
Good.
Yeah, 25 degrees Celsius. So that's good. Okay, so, I sent you a couple notes prior to the show. I don't know if you had a chance to look at much of it.
Yep, I had a bit of a look at it, but there was one thing I thought might be interesting to discuss before we got into comparing the different options.
Sure.
As we know, Apple has just announced their new MacBook Pro. Now,
right.
I feel like the definition of what Apple considered a pro machine used to be the one primarily aimed at graphics people, video editing, people who lived in Photoshop and Illustrator and Final Cut Pro and that sort of thing. They needed a humongous processor. They needed great graphics power. They needed big screens. They needed expandability. And they needed lots of ports because they have cameras and scanners and monitors and export-import devices. Now, through the dark ages of Apple, those were the customers that kept Apple alive. And I think they are now being
marginalized?
Dropped. Yeah, marginalized. But certainly this is not what those pro customers would consider a pro machine, this new MacBook Pro.
No, I would say not. And, you know, I think it does the line good to have a really sexy pro machine. I don't care how many of the Mac Pros that Apple sold. That's really immaterial. In a way, it's I don't know what to say. It's kind of like it's not just PR, but it kind of just, it's a statement. Yeah, that's what it is. It's like a statement of their technical prowess. They're still on their game, and let's face it, those people who produce product are very vocal, and you left out a group that was developers like yourself, need fast processors.
We do, but I feel like the graphics people are really more Apple's pro market over all the years, and I think developers like me are going to stick with the Apple platform because we like developing for iOS and we like developing for Macs. Graphics people don't have that that lock-in.
True.
You can get Photoshop
True.
On anything. So
True.
Is the pro graphics person now going to look, if they're looking to upgrade now, I think they've got serious competition from Microsoft.
Well, the studio, the Surface Studio, certainly. But that isn't shipping yet, but you know, everyone knows it will. What, the spring? Is that when it ships? I think it is. Or is it earlier?
I didn't work that one out. I was looking at the technical specs. I didn't actually look at when it's available.
Well, it's a hell of a box. I don't, and it's very expandable. It has a ton of ports. I don't know about things like memory and all that sort of thing. Those are important to, well, if you're doing video and all that, you know, you do need memory. There's no two ways about it.
That's
you do need
thing.
Ports.
Yeah, and if you're looking at, you know, editing a 50 gigabyte RAW file, you know, with solid state drives, paging in and out from RAM to disk is not such an issue, but it is still
right.
a performance issue. And now let me just.
There's rendering too. Rendering's a big deal. I would think still that's processor intensive.
That's just pure processor power, isn't it? And then there's
mm-hmm.
the graphics card to actually display it. Now I'm at the Surface Studio site at Microsoft. It says ships early 2017. They offer 3 options: 8 gigabyte RAM, 16 gig, and 32 gig. Now, I would consider 8 gig to be pointless for a device this size that's meant to be for graphics handling.
Right.
people have been saying that even the 16 gig on the Mac Pro is not enough for high-end graphics handling. So you're looking, you have to be really looking at the 32 gig option.
Yeah. What they'd really like is be able to clip whatever they want in there.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. But the other thing is this Surface Studio, beg your pardon, has an NVIDIA GeForce graphics card in it.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, they have the equivalent of a touch bar, that little puck-looking thing, the dial, Surface dial.
Yes.
That does a lot of the same stuff. Plus, it's capacitive, so you can put it on the screen. And, like, for instance, if you were adjusting color, it would put a color wheel around it. So as you turned it, you could see the colors. It's really quite sexy.
I saw that in the video. I thought that was pretty groovy. The negative that I've seen reported is even in the advertising videos that Microsoft has put out, you can see there's noticeable lag when you're drawing with the pen.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The pen is not nearly as good as the Apple Pen. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, that said, there are other issues. Let's go through a few of them. And this pertains to the Surface Book and all the Windows ecosystem. The third-party apps, other than a few of the big ones like we've just named, are not good. They're just not professional-looking. And they may do a job, I'm not sure, but they look like they haven't been updated in years. It looks like it's a platform that's been abandoned. If you go to the Windows Store to look at software, it's appalling. It's really not good. So that's what they're working against, and I think they're following Apple's playbook. They're going after the professionals, and they're going to kowtow to them, and they've probably got a Guy Kawasaki kind of guy out there in the field saying, what do you need, what do you want, et cetera, et cetera. That's how I do it.
I'm sure they do. It's interesting, back in the dark days for Apple, one of the criticisms was there's no software for it.
Right.
And, I mean, the big Adobe remained faithful. Microsoft kept going. But there wasn't the plethora of third-party apps that there are now. However, what
Correct.
There was pretty uniformly high quality.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah, at least visually. You know, functionally, many of the things people needed to do their jobs just weren't there. But they had those very functional, if sometimes crude, apps on Windows.
Yes. Yes, we've all been there where we've had to find a crummy Windows app to do some, you know, file conversion or something.
Exactly, exactly. And that's kind of what the store looks like, other than a few of the really big development houses that, you know, AutoCAD and stuff like that. And even that stuff on Windows just doesn't look as cool as it does on a Mac or iOS for that matter.
Interesting. Developers complain about Apple's human interface guidelines and the fact that to get something through the App Store, you pretty much have to comply with most of the guidelines.
Right.
But from the user's point of view, of course, they only see the end result. They see apps that they instinctively know how to use. And they know that once they got in the App Store, they don't crash, and they do what the App Store says they can do.
Yeah, and that's a good way to go. And I'm betting that I think Microsoft, Satya Nadella is no fool. He's got a plan, and he's executing on it. I think a lot of it he is borrowing from Apple, just like Google with their Pixel phone is going, okay, it's an iPhone, so what?
I agree with you. I think Microsoft is heading in a very interesting direction, and I think they've worked out that with all the other OSs basically available for free, they can't make their living selling Microsoft licenses anymore. And
no, they've got to do something. Yeah,
they've got to do something. They dropped the ball on Microsoft Office for iOS. They should have had that ready when the first iPad was released.
They didn't have it ready
to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get a head start. You're right. You're right. I was going to say they didn't develop that. They bought it.
Well, they should have had it ready, basically, for the iPad. It took them years to work out the iPad was a valid machine for Microsoft Office. And in those years, a lot of people had realized they didn't need Microsoft Office.
True. They went to Google Docs, or they went to on the low end, or they just said, hey, I got Pages. I've got Numbers. I've got Keynote. And Keynote's actually a really good presentation tool.
Keynote, I think, is excellent. Numbers and Pages do not have the enormous feature set that Word and Excel have, but then 95% of users don't need that feature set.
No, they're excellent software, and they're really fun to use, actually, which is a far cry from, you know, what you run into with Word and even Excel. But there are people out there. I got a friend who's really good with Excel, and he just can't stand Numbers because he's got all his shortcuts, and they have very few shortcuts in Numbers for some reason. I'm not sure why, but you know,
well,
and he does pivot tables.
People who are experts.
You know.
Yeah, you can't do that in Numbers. I mean, I quite understand there are people, and there's people writing, you know, academic papers or complete books. They wouldn't want to be doing that in Pages. They'll stick to Word for that. And
right.
I quite understand
right.
that. But I just think that Microsoft missed a big opportunity by letting people, well, by forcing people to consider the alternatives instead of having Office ready for the iPad.
You're absolutely right. There's no argument there. And, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. And I think Microsoft did well last week. They made a good mark for themselves. I've watched the Twitter streams that cover this and the Facebook streams, and I've posted a few things to kind of get some discussion going. It's kind of amazing. People who are in offices every day using Microsoft hardware and software hate it. So, the people that I've been talking to, and the people who are sick of the Mac are going, well, that looks pretty good. You know, it's kind of a grass is greener kind of thing, maybe. Who knows?
Perhaps it is. It's disappointing when we expect Apple to be the innovator and they give us a little touch bar and Microsoft comes out with gorgeous-looking device that does things, you know, we didn't expect.
Yes. And, you know, if it wasn't for the software, you know, I would figure out how to get my hands on a Surface Book, because with a Surface Book, I could do what I do on my iPad, and I could do what I do on my Mac. You know, both of them, assuming a parity on the software, on the apps, and the third-party apps. Because I, as I think I mentioned to you before, I more or less consider this a parity is developing between the OSs. Now, Windows still is pretty messy under the covers. But you can put it in tablet mode or Windows 8 mode, and it's really somewhat delightful. It's nice. It's easy. It's simple, and I like that. But
okay, well, that's
you know,
what I wanted to ask you about, because as we know, Apple have kept the two operating systems, the mobile and the desktop, laptop, computer system separate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they use entirely different input methods. One uses your fingers and one uses a trackpad or mouse and keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Microsoft have gone the other route and they have merged the two. But how does that work?
They have and they haven't, which is weird. You know, I explored this a good bit the last 48 hours, and what it seems is there's a mode you can put Windows 10 into that makes it a kinder, gentler Windows 10 that's not so crazy all over the place with the out-of-control control panel and all that stuff, you know, and a million options that you know, you're going to use very few of, that kind of stuff. There's a way to cloak a good bit of that if you don't want to see it, and it's on a tablet. It's pretty good. It's not the best. I still think iOS and macOS are the best in their categories. But they have kind of I wouldn't say it's a dual mode, but they have variants of Windows 10 that become cleaner and messier depending upon what you need to do. They are kind of hedging their bet, which is not very courageous. But
what about the size of the controls? Because in on the Mac, a button only has to be as big as a mouse pointer can can find it. Like if you look at the top of any window on your Mac, there's little colored blobs. They're very small.
Yes.
But that's fine if you've got an accurate mouse pointer. That wouldn't work on a tablet, on an iPad or iPhone. On the iPad and iPhone, all the buttons are big so that you can stab at them with your big chunky fingers and still find them. So how does Microsoft handle those two scales of input?
Well, there are apps that are tablet ready and there are apps that are not. All their apps are dual mode. They do both, I believe, pretty much. And so they do have bigger targets on things like close, minimize, and zoom. They handle some of that, a good deal of it. It's not, it's not there yet. It's not perfect. But
so
you
if
can
you
see
put it
the
in tablet
the,
mode. The default, the system controls change.
They do to an extent, yes. And people, okay. I think, it's kind of like adaptive layout, on iOS. It's like it's adapting to another device a little bit. And the developer has to provide a lot of that stuff, so it's not magic or anything. But the system level stuff, I believe, does change when you go into that mode. The windows look different. The system controls on the windows look different. It's a whole different ball game.
Okay.
So,
if you're thinking of buying a new machine, the Surface Book gives you what's effectively a MacBook plus an iPad in the one machine.
Almost, yeah. It's not there yet, you can tell, but almost, and you can tell they're going there. True.
Yeah, well... I have to say, while ergonomically I do not want to stand in front of my or sit in front of my desktop computer reaching out to the screen all the time, there have been cases where I have reached out to a laptop screen and tried to scroll by swiping down the screen, as I'm sure all of us iPad users have.
Yeah. I mean, I think I sent in a note to you. My body knows what it wants to do. Apple doesn't, but my body does. It was the touch that screen. Yeah, and
well,
I've
definitely doesn't want to
Game,
touch my
it?
iMac, but my iMac is too away and too big. But if I have a little laptop sitting on my lap, then yes, I do want to touch it.
Yeah, it's undeniable. And we're both talking about this without having had a touch bar in front of us. So I don't know if that scratches the itch. It may to an extent, but it's not that readily available to my way of thinking. I haven't experienced it yet, but to my way of thinking, I try to avoid using anything on the top rows when I'm in a keyboard mode. I just want to, type the alphanumerics, and I'm not even that good at the numerics. But as far as function keys go, I hardly ever use those. And if I do, I have to look right at it and be very intentional. So you can't say, oh, this is a great productivity. You're already on your keyboard. Boom. I don't think it's quite that automatic. Do you?
I do use the escape key automatically. Like if you're in a dialogue box and there's cancel and okay, I will use escape without having to look at the keyboard. But the other functions like brightness and volume and stuff, no, I always have to look at them to find them.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm the same way with the escape key. I like to dismiss dialogues with that. And when I write software, I make extensive use of the escape key as well. I like it, especially with,
My Twitter feed was hysterical with developers complaining about the demise of the escape key.
Oh, man. Yeah, mine was too. They were pissed off. They were angry about it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was there, though. I thought I saw the escape key. Can't you go to a mode where you get the function keys back?
It appears in the touch bar, but I don't know if it's there all the time or if the developer has to allow it to be there.
I would think Xcode has the escape key in it all the time.
Yeah, it does. Well, I think actually Xcode 8 changes it. It used to be that escape triggered the autocomplete menu. If you weren't seeing what you wanted, you could press escape and you'd get the list. But I think that now just triggers by itself. I don't think I've used that for ages.
Okay. Well, all right. No. Yeah, but then people were talking about Vim and all these exotic text editors.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody who uses Vim needs help anyway.
True.
Okay.
But these people
all
make a living. That's the point.
Shopping. That's true. Yeah, let's get back to our window shopping and consider three categories of user and what we would recommend for them. I suggest we look at the graphic artist, the developer, and the sort of more low-level, I don't want to be condescending, the more perhaps conventional user who wants to do email, web surfing, write their assignments for a school or university, or look at their photographs, but doesn't need the high-end processing power to edit raw images or to compile code or whatever. So you're a graphics designer. You use Photoshop day in, day out. You're going to buy a new machine tomorrow. What are you going to buy?
That's a very good question. I'm sure it wasn't lost on you that every screenshot of the Surface Book was Photoshop. single one.
I got that one. The Surface Book and the Surface, what's it, the slidey thing.
Surface Studio.
Studio, yeah. What the Macalope calls the tilty thing.
Tilty thing. I wouldn't dismiss it. That thing has a lot of sex appeal, whether it's good or not. And it may be that Microsoft jumped the shark a little bit, but they got a little ahead of the game.
Oh, Jerry, we're losing your audio here.
That's you talk for a bit. I'll let this thing catch up with me. That usually does it. I'll put it on mute.
Okay. Well, as regards the Surface Studio, I think it has solved the big problem about the ergonomics of a touchscreen desktop machine. I have long thought that the answer to this was to have something like an architect's drafting table. And that's what they have. You can slide it down until it's almost flat, and there you have a drafting table that is ergonomically sensible to write on at a desk.
And not just that. Again, you know, it does look like they spent a lot of time making this work with things like Adobe and AutoCAD.
Yes, it's obviously super highly specific for the graphics industry. So I honestly don't think, I don't know what its performance is, and the lag that we've seen from the pen worries me, but then it's not a released product yet. But if I was a graphic artist, I don't think Apple has produced something really to compete with this.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And it's going to turn some heads. No doubt about that, but Apple does have serious lock-in, not just with some of the pro apps, but with, they have a whole ecosystem, and it's really pretty complete, and these people have personal lives too, and they want them to work together.
That's true. That is true. But then, you know, as with your Google stuff, you can have your iCloud stuff through the web, so you don't actually have to drop everything, even if you go to a Windows machine. Okay, well, that's the graphic artist. Now let's talk about what you and I more are, which is developers. So you're a developer, you've got money burning a hole in your pocket, and you want a new development machine tomorrow. What are you going to go and buy?
Well, we're in a somewhat of a different situation because the switch suddenly to another development environment is a serious learning curve. So we've bought in. We've had way too much of the Kool-Aid to give it up at this point. We'd have to have something more compelling to switch from Mac OS in Xcode, and you know, even the other tools that I use. I could use Live Code to do some cross-platform stuff, but there's so many compromises involved in that, and they're still pretty far behind that I'm not particularly tempted. How about you?
I am not tempted by anything. I think I'll keep my money in my pocket this time and keep using my 2-year-old iMac.
Yeah, well, for sure, I'm going to do that. But, I mean, I'm just thinking, like, even in the near term, you know, it's
well,
kind of
like... Well, I think you're right. We're in the Apple ecosystem. We have apps out for Apple. We don't want to change development strategy and jump to Windows. So... therefore, it's a matter of which Apple device we get. You can't yet program on the iPad. There's the Swift Playgrounds, which are a good learning tool, but you can't actually develop on the iPad yet. So we need a Mac, a laptop or desktop, and I don't think Apple has produced anything since my 2-year-old iMac that is better for me.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you're in good shape. You've got a great screen on that, as I recall, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's not the biggest one,
yeah.
But it's Retina, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, well, then I think you're covered. You know, your eyes are going to last another couple hours a day, and, you know, you're going to be delighted, and you're going to be able to see what other people see on a Retina screen. You won't have to guess. And, you know, there's a lot of goodness there. I can't fault you for that. That sounds like a great idea. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm probably in the market for a new Mac at some point, and the Pro looks pretty darn good. Since I don't do a lot of Xcode, except to look at your code and mess around with stuff that you tell me to do, I'll do more live code stuff. So conceivably, I could even get by with something like a MacBook, the vanilla.
You could. Screen size is a problem when developing, I feel. And also, live code loves lots and lots of memory.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, it's a little skimpy on those things. If I had a couple things going on at the same time, I would start running into trouble. But my use, as you know, my use of my Mac is only for that one thing, more or less. So,
yes.
Yeah, you do a lot of stuff on your Mac compared to me. So, I might be able to escape by. I might be able to escape by. Who knows?
Okay, all right. So now you're a sort of more conventional user. You do emails, you surf the web, you write occasional document, you listen to your music, you upload your photos, whatever. Now, what are you going to buy tomorrow?
Well, I can tell you what I do today. Today I have an iPad, and I like it for that. And I've got a little clamp case keyboard that goes along with it that makes it function a great deal like the Surface Book, except it's not as big. It would be if I got the big MacBook Pro, but iPad Pro, but I had that, and I gave it back. I thought it was too big. So, yeah, I'm fine with an iPad. And actually, people have the impression that the iPads are expensive. The iPad Pro is expensive, in my opinion. It is a little high. And, you know, the big one, and they jump up in price very quickly if you get anything at all with them, like a pen or the smart keyboard or more storage. I mean, quickly, you get up above $1,000. And with a little bit of Apple Care and a few other things, you're at $1,500 before you know what hit you. So it's not a great economic move, but there are ways to ameliorate that. You can get refurbed older iPads. If you don't need a Pro, you can get an iPad Air 2. I bought one for my neighbor, and it was really inexpensive. It was under $300, so you can do fine, you know, with an inexpensive machine like that. You certainly can, and I really like my iPad. I like the way it works. I like the OS. You know, I like a lot of things about it. So. Yeah, that would be my go-to thing. But, you know, that's me. But there are other, just like with developers, you and I are invested in the ecosystems we're in.
That's true.
So, you know, we should consider both developers, illustrators, and everyday users who are, let's say, just getting out of college or in college or, you know,
just beginning a career.
Yeah.
Do you see the Surface Book as being a competitor for the iPad rather than the MacBook?
No, I think it's a direct competitor to the MacBook Pro, but at the same time, it eliminates the need for an iPad-like device, a tablet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's two things in one. I do think it's two things in one. It's intended to be, and if they ever get any decent apps, it will be.
Okay. Well, now, here's the wild card you threw at me this morning, which is the Asus Chromebook Flip.
Yeah.
Now, it's running Chrome OS. It's pretty low spec, but it's only running, it basically runs Chrome and all the Chrome apps. So it's probably spec'd enough for what it needs to do. It hasn't got much memory. So how would you fit that into the ecosystem?
It's Mary Jane and I talked a good bit about that this afternoon. It's a real wild card because the price is so dramatically low, and they have tremendous traction in education. They're probably beating the socks off of everybody. And even in some of the, what would you say, small and even medium-sized businesses, it's starting to pick up a lot of steam because they're selling aggressively to the people of Google Apps, Google Docs and Sheets and all that stuff. So, and I should state the other thing is that there are a few of them now, including the Flip, that can run Android apps, and that really changes what Chrome OS is in a very significant manner.
That is important. A lot of people have speculated that Apple will produce a system to allow iOS apps to run on MacBooks, which they've kind of already done. And it's part of Xcode is the iOS simulator, so the code's already there. It's just a matter of making it rather more accessible.
Well, it is. And I listened to, I tuned into the Google I/O stuff this afternoon that talked about Chrome OS and its relationship to Android and how they handle it in software. And it's not emulation at all. It's baked in pretty deeply. And it's also tied into their whole update system. So if you have one of these Chromebook flips and you're in the right track, they have three tracks. They have developer, beta, and stable. So right now it's for developer only. And so if you're in that track, you're getting these updates, you know, every week. And you don't only get them to Chrome OS, you also get them for Android, and they're all coordinated. And so this whole fragmentation problem they've been having, it's kind of, it goes away with those Chromebooks. They did the Chromebook part of it right. They screwed up the Android stuff. Yeah, and so that's, I don't just look at what's happening today with any of these platforms. I kind of look at the trajectory, where they're headed. And Google and Windows are both making very intelligent moves considering their organizational structure and considering their business models. I think that in particular, this business they're doing with Chrome, I don't know how they make money from it necessarily. I suppose they do. But for the consumer, it's a huge, huge deal. When you consider I can get a flip with a maxed out flip, which means, you know, the most storage, 32 gigs, which doesn't sound like much, but for that device, it is. And also 4 gigs of memory, which is a huge amount of memory for a Chromebook, believe it or not. And, you know, it works with orientation. When you flip it over and make it into a tablet, it automatically takes any window you got and makes it full screen, increases the size of the targets, you know, all that stuff. So it can't be scoffed at. When you can buy 3 of those for the price of most of the iPads, that goes where you live. That's pretty serious.
Well, considering those that pricing, you can certainly see why it's attractive to education.
Well, yeah, and plus they're sturdy. The Flip in particular has gotten huge marks on how well it's built. Considering how inexpensive the device is, they have a lot of aluminum on that thing. And I watched a couple different YouTubes that this guy who reviews them, he showed it unboxed 3 months later, and then 3 months after that. And he pointed out that primarily his 9-year-old daughter used it for school and text and friends and stuff like that. So it had hard use. And he like went over it with a microscope almost on camera. And that thing really held up well. You have one teeny little scratch that you couldn't even see on it. And the screen was great and all that stuff. You know, now it's not Retina, but it is high definition. It's some of the viewing angles aren't as good as they are on an iPad, but the older iPads, they're probably they're not that different that a layman wouldn't go, oh, that's pretty good. And it's definitely better. I think it's better. It's better than my MacBook Air.
Wow. Which is sad. Okay. Well, that's a statement. both Microsoft and Apple are suffering from is Intel. Intel's
yes.
development has really slowed.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree. And as you know, these now there are some Intel Chromebooks, but see, they don't rely on the cutting edge Intel stuff, so they're fine.
Yeah, they're not selling them as a performance machine, as a pro machine. The trouble is when you're selling a MacBook Pro as a pro machine, and you know the chip in it is what 18 months old. That's not really cutting edge.
No, it's not cutting edge at all. And you know, I also did a little looking into it, and evidently, Google has some serious partnership stuff going on with HP, Samsung, and also with Asus and Acer. They are all four of those people are producing some pro level Chrome OS stuff. And so they're going to beef up the storage. They're going to beef up the memory. They're going to, you know, they got big plans for this thing. So, you know, that's not going to sit still. They're going to move forward with they own the low end.
Okay.
Right.
Well, we're running out of time, Jerry, but this has been an interesting discussion.
Okay.
And it's great to see competition, you know, viable competition in all the spheres, in all the different levels of the computing world. It can only give us better products in the end.
Oh, I totally agree. I think it's a huge development, and I don't want to see those old days. You talked about the dark days of Apple. Those were dark days for everybody in a way, because there was a monopoly, and it was Windows, and that was not good. I think we all know where that was going, and we're just lucky that you know, Steve Jobs came along with the iMac in those pretty shapes, and more importantly, the iPod.
Yeah, monopoly stifles innovation. There's no doubt about it. So we need the competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's good for developers. We're in a good spot. We have more choices.
Yeah. All right. So that's been fun talking, Jerry. And we'll talk again next week. We'll think of something interesting to talk about.
All right.
And thanks, Tim, for listening in and your comments. Bye.
Yes. Bye.